to the second case of the day, Jafari v. Wynn. Mr. Leverson.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Today we visit the realm of conflict of laws. Dean Prosser said that the realm of conflict of laws is a dismal swamp filled with quaking quagmires and inhabited by learned but eccentric professors who speak in strange and incomprehensible jargon.
That's a great invitation to the area.
As a result of many of those professors advancing various theories of conflicts of law, in the last 50 years, states have adopted different approaches to conflicts of law that vary from the traditional rules of lex loci. The new approaches create a fair amount of uncertainty as to how the results will be. But there is one rule that is black letter law today, as it was, as it has been for several centuries. That rule is that no court will entertain a cause of action that is repugnant to the policy of the forum. That was the law in Lord Mansfield's day. That was the law in Chancellor Evans' time. That was the law 108 years ago when the Wisconsin Supreme Court decided Bartlett versus Collins. That was the law in Professor Beale's day in the time of the first restatement. That was the law in Professor Reese's time, the second restatement. That was the law when the Wisconsin Supreme Court decided Heath versus Zellmer. And that is the law today. The threshold issue in this appeal is whether federal choice of law rules or state choice of law rules control questions of state law presented in a bankruptcy case. That precise issue was the first question presented in the certiorari petition in Vanston Bondholders Protective Committee versus Green. Court granted review on that issue, but then it ducked it. The court decided the case based on the proposition that as a matter of federal law, interest was not to be allowed on interest in bankruptcy cases. 2 years after Vanston, in 1948, Congress amended the Rules of Decision Act, 28 U.S.C. Section 1652. Prior to 1948, the Rules of Decision Act provided that state law would govern in trials at common law.
If Wisconsin conflict of law rules would apply here, I have a hard time seeing why Nevada law wouldn't come out the winner under that. And if this were if he owed money to a supermarket in Nevada and he bought everything there, here all the activities point to Nevada.
The activities point to Nevada, Your Honor, but that goes to the fundamental rule, the rule of black letter law. It is against Wisconsin's public policy. It has been against Wisconsin's public policy since our Constitution was adopted to enforce a gambling debt in court. It's reflected in our statute passed by the legislature. It's been enforced in numerous cases decided by the Wisconsin Supreme Court. The policy reasons why enforcing gambling debts are a bad thing are set forth in really the social science research I've alluded to in my brief. But
what happens to gambling debts in Wisconsin at multitude of casinos that are in operation?
The casinos, and this is one way in which our policy is retained. All of the treaties, every single one of the treaties with the tribes, contains a provision, paragraph 5D, that prohibits the tribes from extending credit for the purpose of gambling. So you can gamble in cash, but not in not with the type of marker here that gets people into trouble in Las Vegas, and which is then enforced by the Clark County District Attorney with the threat of criminal prosecution, which will be dropped, of course, if people pay their marker debt.
And as your response indicates, you agree that the casinos would have a right to payment in a court in Nevada, right?
Absolutely.
And if the casinos sued in a Nevada court, the Wisconsin statute wouldn't make the contracts unenforceable, correct?
Not in a Nevada court, because a Nevada court would apply the law of that forum.
Well, what if this claim was for something more mundane, kind of following up on Judge Evans' supermarket situation? Say a car dealer in Nevada had sold Jafari a car in Nevada for his use there, and the contract said it would be enforced under Nevada law. If he sued for bankruptcy in Wisconsin, could he use defenses that applied only under Wisconsin law to maintain the car dealer's claim was unenforceable?
You'd have to – our position is that even in a contract case, you would apply the Heath versus Zellmer factors. And I don't – there's nothing against public policy about – under Wisconsin law with regard to a debt for a car. So as to whether Nevada law or Wisconsin substantive law would apply, you'd have to go through and look at the interests of interstate and international order, predictability of results, the interests of the forum. Presumably Wisconsin would have no interest in that. Wisconsin has an interest in protecting its residents from impoverishment from gambling debts. That's why our statute is there.
And let me ask you one further question. If we agree with your position, can the casino still sue Jafari for breach of contract in a Nevada court?
Absent bankruptcy, they could. And they did. One of them did. Wynn Las Vegas did. But bankruptcy imposes the automatic stay, and as a result of that, the case is litigated in a Wisconsin court. In a Wisconsin federal court that we submit is obligated to apply Wisconsin choice of law rules. I do want to get back briefly to the threshold question of federal common law choice of law rules versus forum state rules. I believe that Matter of Iowa Railroad is controlling precedent of this court on this issue, and I commend your attention to it. Judge Easterbrook, in a masterful decision, the trial court in that case had...
You know, lawyers always call opinions they agree with masterful. As you call the bankruptcy judge's opinion, thorough and scholarly.
It was, Your Honor.
Yeah. Of course, the district judge didn't agree with it.
The opinion in Matter of Iowa Railway goes through the sort of nebulous interest in an interstate railway line that Judge Adams of the Third Circuit had invoked. Judge Grady had done that in the district court in Matter of Iowa Railway. On appeal, Judge Easterbrook said that kind of nebulous federal common law interest is not enough. And he went through, there was no statutory basis for treating interline balances as trust fund under the applicable Interstate Commerce Act. There was no sufficient interest to create federal common law. And therefore, he said, we look to state law, in that case, starting with Illinois state law and its choice of law rules to determine the applicable trust law, if there was any trust law. Now, Judge Easterbrook was also the author of this court's opinion in RTC versus Chapman, which was a case that was deemed to arise under federal law. I do want to address, since I see Judge Flom sitting directly in front of me, footnote 2 of this court's opinion in FDIC versus Wabick. The question is, what was the choice of law holding in RTC versus Chapman? Judge Easterbrook says, very loosely, this is not a diversity case in which the forum state's rules would be controlling. This is a case that is deemed to arise under federal law. The plaintiff's claim was deemed to arise under federal law, and therefore the choice of law principles were federal choice of law principles. I don't believe what Judge Easterbrook was saying there was that in any case in which the source of federal jurisdiction is a federal question, if there is a question of state law that arises, you use federal choice of law principles. For example, you could have supplemental jurisdiction, a state law claim, or as we see in bankruptcy all the time, state law claims being filed as claims. Judge Easterbrook was the author both of Matter of Iowa Railway and of RTC.
I'll tell you, if Judge Easterbrook was here, the first thing he would say is that the court issues opinions, not judges. So it's
sure.
The opinion of the court.
It is the opinion of the court, but because he was the author, if there was any intent to overrule what I believe the holding of Matter of Iowa Railway was, he certainly would have been cognizant of that case. So with regard to footnote 2 in FDIC versus Wabick, I think the holding is simply where the plaintiff's claim arises under federal law, but you have to fill in the interstices, federal choice of law principles control. And that's certainly what this court held in Berger versus AXA Advisors. So we submit that state choice of law rules govern, not federal choice of law rules govern. And then let me turn to the district court. The district court was of the belief that Wisconsin has different sets of choice of law rules for contract and tort. I think if you look at the history of Wisconsin's choice of law jurisprudence, it starts out with in Erhammer versus Olson and Zellinger versus State Sand and Gravel and Heath versus Zellmer. The court refers interchangeably to the center of gravity approach and the governmental interest approach and the grouping of contacts approach, which conflict scholars may slightly differentiate. But these are all approaches that were designed to get away from the traditional rules of lex loci, which were place of performance and place of contracting, the strict rules. So in these cases, the court was trying to get to an approach that allowed you to look at the better rule of law, the forum's governmental interests. And those cases say, we now adopt the grouping of contacts approach both for contracts and for tort. Later in Haynes versus Mid-Century Insurance, the court begins to refer to Section 188 of the Restatement, and it has these various factors which are to be looked at in light of Section 6 of the Restatement, which is very similar to the five Leflar choice influencing considerations in Heath versus Zellmer. And there gradually appears in some of the cases the statement, well, in contract cases we use a grouping of contacts approach, and in tort cases, we look at the Heath versus Zellmer choice influencing considerations. I look at that and say, those are the same things. And I think if you look at the most recent decisions of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, and I would refer you particularly to paragraph 25 of Justice Crook's opinion in Beloit Liquidating Trust versus Grade, he again points out that he cites Zellinger, and he said that these principles should be applied in all cases, no matter the substantive area of the law. But let's say there is a difference between contracts and tort. In those cases in which Wisconsin has looked at the Section 188 factors, the court has made it very clear, in fact, that we go beyond the restatement.
Let me ask you hypothetically, suppose he did all the gambling that he did, and while he was doing it, he was a resident of Nevada. And 3-4 weeks ago, whenever, moves to Wisconsin. Now he gets sued in Wisconsin.
Under Hunker versus Royal Indemnity Corporation, cited in a footnote in our brief, because we are a justice-seeking jurisdiction, we will protect people no matter where they are from. Some of it has to...
So then people who own old gambling markers around the country could move to Wisconsin and be shielded from...
And if the casinos go out of business... thank you, Jesus, Your Honor. As far as Wisconsin's policy is concerned,
understand that Wisconsin does not permit legalized gambling, although there's gambling all over the state of Wisconsin.
Well, we have permitted it in a limited way, as the Court of Appeals held in State versus Gonnelly, citing to the Connecticut case. But that limited way does not interfere with our historical resistance to gambling on credit. You have to understand the misery that is inflicted on human beings when they are subjected to this burden over their heads that they cannot pay. The suicide rates among compulsive gamblers truly are, in one study of Gamblers Anonymous, the rates range between 8% and 21% of all compulsive gamblers. That debt burden is something that is truly a weight. Wynn has, and the two appellees here have reserved their rights to pursue non-dischargeability actions against my client. I see that I'm eating into my rebuttal time, but the point I was about to make before Your Honor spoke up was, even if there is a differentiation between contracts and tort cases under Wisconsin law, our court has made it abundantly clear that all of these factors, residency, where the contract was entered into, and so on, are only significant insofar as they relate to the policies both of the forum and the other state. And our court will not entertain a cause of action that is repugnant to its policy. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Leverson. Mr. Prange?
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Roy Prang, and I represent the casinos. I'm in somewhat of a dilemma here because I agree with District Judge Crabb, who said I don't really need to decide what choice of law rule, whether the court should, bankruptcy court should apply a federal rule or the state rule, because it comes out the same either way. And we submit that that was the correct ruling. We see the position of the debtor to be that the Heath factors and the Wisconsin policy anti-gaming statute control the entire analysis. And in our view, that's the end game. We're trying to find out whether you get to Wisconsin law, substantive law, eventually anyway. We're very mindful of the Supreme Court's decision in Raleigh, where creditors' entitlements in bankruptcy arise from the substantive law that created them. I don't think there's any dispute in this case that the substantive law that created these obligations was the law of Nevada. They essentially equate a bankruptcy court sitting in Wisconsin with a Wisconsin court, a Wisconsin state court. Clearly, it is not. A bankruptcy court has to deal with claims issues that may arise throughout the country. And in dealing with those, it has to apply choice of law rules. And we submit that the Vanston rule, if you will, even it's considered dicta, is the way to go. We think that this court has gone in that direction already in the Chapman case, in the Wabik case, and in the Berger case. We believe that the Berger case provides an analogy for analyzing these cases and analyzing what the relationships are between the parties and the obligations. This case is not about the evils of gambling, divorce, suicide. It's about enforcing an obligation in bankruptcy. The need for a uniform choice of law rules, we believe, in bankruptcy courts is overriding. Were the rule to be that the bankruptcy court in each forum merely looks to the substantive law of that forum and nothing else, I think that makes for contradictions that could arise throughout the country, where essentially the bankruptcy court is dealing with particularly policy issues that one state has decided, which may be contrary to the other states. And if there should be one thing in the bankruptcy court, it should be uniformity.
Well, don't we have that already in areas like real estate?
In terms of deciding the substantive claim, we do. I mean, all what we're trying to do is, how do we get to the substantive law eventually in which a real estate claim, a secured creditor holding a mortgage, for example?
Homestead exemption.
Exactly. In the appellant's briefs, they've cited, and we agree, to the Commission on Gambling, I believe it was back in 1970, that basically said, we're going to leave regulation of these matters to the states. And that's essentially what has happened. There are a significant number of states that would not permit this type of contract. Obviously, Wisconsin is one of them. There are other states that do. But even if they're in the minority, it's not a question of counting up how many states have anti-gaming statutes or would not enforce this contract against those states that would. The question is which state has the most significant relationship here. And as the district court said, it's not even close. Counsel had raised the issue of the Heath factors have to apply no matter what. I don't think that's the way the Wisconsin case law reads. It's certainly not the way Judge Crabb said that they read. It essentially, the Heath factors, Heath predated a significant number, virtually all of the cases that now set forth what the law is on Wisconsin choice of law rules. You have Gillette, you have Drinkwater. And these cases basically provide, as the district judge found, that it's only in a contracts case, it's only in a tie-breaking situation that you really even get into the Heath factors. I think effectively what the appellants have done, I think what the bankruptcy court did, is to add another factor, which I think is incorrect. And that other factor is the statute itself. Well, the statute is not a factor. The factors include place of contract, place of negotiation, place of payment. So we believe, getting back to my dilemma, we think the district court got it right, so you really don't need to decide what choice of law to apply. But if you were to do so, I think there's no question that the federal choice of law rule should apply, and that should be a most significant relationship test. I promised myself I wouldn't burden the court with that slogan, what happens in you-know-where stays in you-know-where, and I'm not going to do that. But suffice it to say, we believe that the substantive law that applies here under choice of law rules would be that of Nevada, and that the order allowing the claims should be affirmed. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Bryan. Leverson?
Your Honor, one of the confusing things about the restatement is that it puts things in different places. Wisconsin has not adopted the replacement, but Section 90 of the restatement says no court shall entertain a cause of action that is contrary to the strong public policy of the forum. This is the same wording as Section 612 of the first restatement. In looking at Section 188 in the abstract, you have to also take into, which some Wisconsin courts have cited, you have to take into account Section 90 as well. And Heath versus Elmer says, no matter how overwhelming the contacts are with another jurisdiction, if the cause of action is truly repugnant to the policy of Wisconsin, we will not enforce it. I would respectfully submit that you have to look at the repugnance of the claim to the state of Wisconsin. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Thanks, Levinson. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.